take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Welcome to America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Michelle, on Nurses Out Loud Friday edition. So many things happened throughout 2020 and 2021 for a person that's more than half of 100 years old, I can honestly say I've never seen in my lifetime. As a retired nurse who ended up in the COVID unit in July of 2020, I was awakened suddenly that something was going on that was not normal within the medical community. As I started advocating for patients to be able to get access to early treatment modalities at home so that we could keep them out of the hospital, unlike myself, I would research to find doctors offering solutions. I would study their data and create a plan of care to share with the people that were coming to me for help. On my measly Instagram platform alone, I went from less than 100 followers to now 30,000 followers, even censored. And they came from all over the world, and they were all reporting the same thing. Their doctors had forsaken them. They have been told the same thing that my family had been told in 2020. Stay home, quarantine, take Tylenol and cough syrup, and only come to the hospital if you have difficulty breathing. As a nurse, I knew that was useless, unhelpful information. Needless to say, if you leave a presumably lethal respiratory virus untreated with Tylenol and cough syrup, the chances of you showing up in the hospital with a respiratory distress situation and need for intensive medical care intervention is going to greatly increase. I don't want to make a broad sweeping statement that belongs to 100% of all the doctors in this country, maybe even the world, but I will say this, that it is a minority of that majority who did what I call brave acts of humanity. They used the knowledge that they had from years of practice and experience caring for patients, and they attempted to share that information with the world for people like me to get a hold of so that I could help people within my scope of influence. And because of those brave doctors, I was able to help thousands of people around the world. It's hard to find information that you need to help people understand that they need to anti-infect the upper airway. And I knew as a nurse that that was something that was going to be important for this supposedly lethal virus that we were all being shut down for. I knew that the patient needed to be nebulized because what had helped me when I was in the hospital. And when I learned that nebulization of hydrogen peroxide and iodine could be an extremely effective treatment option, I looked for doctors publishing information like that. One of those brave doctors that I discovered was Dr. Brownstein. And I heard him on an interview with Dr. Mercola, and they were discussing the topic of what I was most interested in at the time, and it was the nebulized hydrogen peroxide. Now, 4 years later, I teach that what I call the snort gargle nebulized supplement protocol, and the Dr. Brownstein protocol for nebulization is what I teach all of those coming to me for help. The ones who follow the protocol that I taught, they do it well, and if they do it for a couple of days, they never see the hospital. And those who partially comply with everything except for the nebulization are sure to be calling me weeks later with a persistent cough that can't seem to shake. And when I ask, did you nebulize your hydrogen peroxide and Lugol's iodine? As I told you, the answer is always no. So I would tell them, you know, start back over at the beginning, try it again, and you'll be fine in a couple of days. And sure enough, they always are. So I cannot tell you how happy I was when I was at a medical conference in Arizona just this last fall of 2023, and I heard that Dr. Brownstein was going to be there. I happened to be on a walker because I just broke in my hip, and I was able to stop him in his tracks and make him talk to me because I just had to meet him because he did not know that Nurse Michelle had been teaching his protocol for the last 3 years. So today, he is my special guest. My brave doctor special guest today is Dr. David Brownstein, and I'm so thankful to have him here. Thank you for coming on, and I can't wait to hear everything you have to say about how this protocol started.
Well, thanks for having me on, Miss Michelle.
Well, I would love to know. First of all, when I first heard you, when you and Dr. Mercola were talking about the protocol, I was thinking as a nurse, oh my word, this sounds so complicated by the way these doctors are teaching it that I've got to find a way to simplify this and make it easier to understand because it boggled my mind. Other people, it didn't boggle, but it boggled mine because y'all were using like a bag, 1,000 milliliter bag of saline that you were injecting it into. And I was trying to get it down to just a little mason jar that people could keep in their fridge. So I came up with my own math and got it down to a simple math and then started teaching from there. But it blew me away. I can't tell you how many times I listened to that interview. So thank you for doing that with him. I think he was learning from you, actually. It was.
We had a nice time doing the interview, and I thank Dr. Mercola for having me on. And I've been using, I started using nebulized peroxide about 25 years ago for people with viral infections and upper respiratory stuff, as well as any lung infection or really lung disease, from COPD to lung cancer to fibrosis of the lungs. And it's one of the most successful therapies I've seen. And just as your experience was, those who nebulized did the best, I can tell you without a doubt. I mean, during COVID, we treated people, and we'll get to that. But the one thing that stood out amongst everything else that we did, a dilute
Was.
solution of nebulized peroxide and iodine. And usually on the second dose, people say their lungs opened up. Those who couldn't breathe during COVID, their lungs finally started to open up. And I think that the earlier people do this with any type of lung infection or upper respiratory infection, certainly the better they'll do.
Now, I'm going to put in my show notes my simplified version of my recipe, but I have itemized it out so simple because I found out that when it came down to this pandemic, that's what was needed, was people needed, even if you're a lawyer and you have a very high IQ, medical knowledge is complicated to people. So they needed to be brought down to the simplest form to tell me step by step what to do. And I felt like what you do with this protocol, what I call the Brownstein protocol, which involves the vitamin C and the vitamin A and vitamin D. Tell us real quickly about that protocol.
So when COVID struck in December of 2019 in China, there was a report at the end of December, after Christmas, before New Year's, of I think it was three atypical pneumonia cases admitted to a Chinese hospital near Wuhan, and it was some novel strain of coronavirus. And I filed every report from that moment, and into 2020, we all remember those pictures of.
People dropping
In
in the
Europe,
streets.
the pictures of the cold trucks waiting for the bodies, and that picture went around. That was a viral picture in Italy of that ward where there were beds like every 2 feet, and they were all on these ventilators, and it must have been 20 people in a really small room on ventilators, and it looked like that's it. And the reports from Hong Kong and then from Spain and Italy and all that stuff. And then the modeling came out for the US that by the end of the year, we'd have over 1 million dead and 3 million infected with COVID. And so, the fear was palpable, and there was no treatment for it. And China starts shutting down everything. And so, Italy started shutting down everything. And then, one country after another started doing that. And then COVID hit the United States somewhere in February, the end of January, beginning of February on the West Coast. And shortly after that, in the beginning of March, COVID came to there were outbreaks in three states, major outbreaks in three states. It was Michigan, New Jersey, and New York. And I'm sorry, four states. Massachusetts was in there too. And I started getting phone calls. So we knew this was coming. It was only a matter of time, and you saw it coming across. And the second The last, this first or second Thursday in March is the end of my work week. And the governor of Michigan was talking about shutting down the state the following week. She hadn't formally announced it. So my office manager comes to me on that Thursday in the afternoon and says, "You got to talk to the staff." "Why?" "Well, no one's going to show up for work Monday." I'm like, "Why aren't they going to show up for work Monday? They're all scared." And I'm like, "Okay, we'll talk to them." So I get them in the waiting room and I said, "What's on your minds?" And we, "When are we closing the office?" I'm like, "Close the office? Why would we close the office? We don't want to die of COVID." And
hard to believe we were all there. We forget that that's how serious we believed it was.
You know, and so this was Thursday. The governor announced on Monday she was shutting the state down, you know, a couple days, somewhere in the middle of the following week. So I said to my staff, look, I don't think we're all going to die. I think this is being way overblown. And there's a fear. I called it fear porn that they're spreading over all of us. And I said, we've been treating viral illnesses successfully for close to 3 decades. I said, the flu, this is what I told my staff, the flu kills 20,000 to 100,000 people every year on average across the United States. I said, we can't recall. I've talked to my partners. There's six of us practicing in the office. Now we have seven because I've got two daughters there practicing. My seventh is now practicing. And I said, we can't recall a patient dying from the flu in our practice. Now, if 50,000 are dying for a year, you know, maybe that's an average, times 30 years, where the heck are they? Where are all these dead people in our practice? I said, none of us can recall even hospitalizing a patient for pneumonia. And I said, so we've been treating viral illnesses using our protocol, which, you know, I didn't give it the Brownstein protocol name. I'm not the most thrilled with doctors giving their own names to their protocol. Well, somebody else gave it.
It was me.
Robert,
I call it the Dr. Brownstein protocol.
I'm honored. I'm accepting it. I didn't give it though. I want that to know. Robert Rowan actually was the one who first said it. I said, we've got our own protocol, and the protocol, you know, the staff knew what it was. We've done, you know, nebulized peroxide and iodine. We'll get into what it is. High doses of orally vitamin A, C, D, and iodine. And if they need more, they would come in for IVs of hydrogen peroxide and vitamin C. And our patients have not been hospitalized, and they are not dying that we can remember in our practice. And so I said, we have treated undoubtedly probably 30% coronavirus during every flu season, because that's about the average of what coronavirus infects people. I said, we haven't treated this strain that's coming, but this isn't going to be any different. When SARS-1 came out in the early 2000s, I wasn't worried about that. I studied that. It didn't come to us, but I said I wasn't worried about this one. I said, we're nimble enough in our practice that if our protocol doesn't work, we'll find something that does. And I said, by the way, patients are going to have nowhere to go starting next week when the government closes us down. I said, the only thing that's going to be open are grocery stores and liquor stores. Because there's no way they're going to close the liquor stores. And they didn't in the state of Michigan. And I said, I am not abandoning my patients. I said, I took an oath in med school that said I'd be there for them. I said, I remember this in the AIDS crisis. And I was in med school in the 1980s in the AIDS crisis.
Me too.
And I remember vividly. Now, I was a conventional doctor back then. I didn't start out being a holistic doctor. So I was a third year med student. It was late at night in the hospital, and I had a tube of a little cup with vials in it, and I was going to go draw the blood from an AIDS patient. So I'm going to walk in the room. My med student colleague says to me, what are you doing? Like, I'm going to draw blood. Why? Because he needs it. And we knew his case. Hemoglobin was falling and all this. And he said, I wouldn't draw his blood. I'm like, why not? He goes, it's got AIDS. And I said, well, I'm not going to have sex with him, and I'm going to do my best not to share needles with him. I'm going to be cautious.
Yeah.
And I said, he said, why don't you wait till the morning when the blood drawing team gets here? I'm like, because we need his hemoglobin now. And he goes, I wouldn't do that. And he, you know, walked away. And I remember, you know, we used to do rounds from the room, from the door. The attending wouldn't walk in the room. He would just ask the patient questions from the door. And I thought that was wrong. And I'd go in later and do my own rounds and, you know, listen to him and treat him like a real patient and a real human being. So I saw it just repeating itself with this crisis. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I said to the staff, look,
my doctors treated me like I had leprosy, and I was a high risk person after I came home from the COVID unit. It's like, I'm high risk and you won't see me.
Yeah. So I said to the staff, we're open for business. I said, anyone who doesn't want to work doesn't have to work. I'm not forcing anybody to work. I said, if we have to work, because the doctors, we got together and we all agreed we're staying open. I said, if we have to work alone, we're working alone, and I won't be able to see as many patients, but I'm doing it. So the next week, the governor announces she's closing down. We lost about 50% of our staff. All my nurses stayed with me, which was amazing. And about 50% of my front desk stayed home. Nobody lost their job. I didn't think about it twice. I didn't hold any grudges. I didn't, you know, everyone was scared. I mean, they did what they had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand my colleagues that closed down and went virtual at that time. You know, the governor announces everything's closing down, so we're staying open. I'm seeing patients. My office manager comes to me the following week and says, I think we need to do virtual talks, virtual visits. I'm like, Ann, I'm not going to like that. And she goes, I think you need to try it. You know, the staff is nervous about all these people coming in the office. And I said, all right, I'll try it. I said, but I can tell you it's not going to work. So the first morning I did like two patients. I went to her after the second one. I said, put them all back. I said, I'm not doing this. This is no way to practice medicine. I'm not doing a good job. I need to touch them. I need to listen to them. I need to see them. I am still amazed that the vast majority of my colleagues shut down their offices and went virtual, and I don't understand it. And you know, I'll never understand
still
it.
Virtual. A lot of mine even still want to do virtual 4 years later.
I don't get it. I don't get, you know, what I don't, you know, I went to med school. I knew I was going to be around sick people, and so be it. But anyways, we ended up treating people with our protocol. It was the same protocol we used. I wrote about it in my book, Holistic Approach to Viruses. And, you know, at first we were doing it, like you said, with the nebulized peroxide and bag. We were mixing it up for people because, you know, when people were sick, they weren't thinking clearly. We didn't know if they could mix up things on their own. I didn't give them enough credit because what happened was the government came after me after I started posting videos of interviewing patients who got better. Now,
which
is
like a really intelligent thing to do because you discover something that's good. It's a pandemic. Well, everybody's befuddled. Why not give hope?
So the government said, we want to know what works. There was that talk at the beginning of this. So I started posting videos about what I was doing, started keeping track of my numbers. And as patients got better, I had patients call me, they couldn't breathe. Their pulse ox was in the 80s and, you know, upper 70s, and they got better. And so I'd be like you and me, we'd be talking. I would let them do the talking. I would just be the interviewer. And I posted probably 20 of those. And then I got letters from the Federal Trade Commission. I got letters from the state board, you know, Federal Trade Commission telling me to take it all down or else I'm going to hear from the U.S. Justice Department. And that was a fun time. And
I definitely want to delve into that after the second half, because that is like a big story in itself. I mean, we're talking about somebody out there literally helping the community, doing exactly what he took an oath to do. And the fact that he even gets come after, the fact that we're in 2024 now, and this is literally a story that we all know has happening all over the country. So your story is unbelievable on this, but I want to stick with something, because the fact that anybody even had a problem with H2O to being a nebulized thing, I came up with four ways for people to nebulize hydrogen peroxide. It was the Brownstein method, the Mercola, yours was the 0.04, the Mercola was the 0.1%, then I had the NIH one, which was the 1.5%. And then I had the Dr. Levy, which was the
3%.
Yeah, 3%. I said, but you can't do it unless you call Dr. Levy. I'm not going to supervise anything to do with this. But the citation that I found that the NIH had published actually is titled, Might Hydrogen Peroxide Reduce the Hospitalization Rate and Complications of SARS-CoV Infection? And the NIH proposes a regimen of gargling 1.5% H2O2 and nasal washes with a nebulizer two times a day. And hydrogen peroxide is safe for use on the mucous membrane, and it's already commonly used in otolaryngology.
Wow. Sounds like the Brownstein protocol to me. Sounds like what we've been doing for 30 years. Then why'd the Fed show up and start hassling me and all this stuff? But anyways, look, I tell the story when I started nebulizing peroxide. I don't know, this was 20 years ago or something. I'd already been doing it during cold and flu season. So this guy comes in my office. I called him a blue man. He was carrying an oxygen tank, bad COPD, was blue. Just, you know, he was in his mid 70s, and he looked awful. And I talked to him, you know, and he wasn't sick. He was just COPD sick, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you know, from cigarette smoking. So, you know, I did my workup on him, and, you know, I put him on nebulized peroxide and iodine, and he comes in for the next visit and he's all pink, and his oxygen's turned down from 6 liters to 2 liters. And he's doing more and he's feeling better with it. That man took that nebulizer to two different houses, two different nursing homes. And I after a while later, he couldn't come in to see me because he was just too sick and too old. So I'd go to his nursing home. The last nursing home was like an old school I remember the cinder block, you know, cinder block walls. And there on his nightstand was that nebulizer right there. He lived 10 more years. And there was no way that guy was going to live much longer when I first saw him, the way he was breathing.
Yeah, when I heard this story, I've repeated this story because I think it's such an amazing story that he didn't, they wanted to take it away from him, if I recall. And he's like, no,
Oh,
can't take it from
he
me.
got to the nursing home, one of the two nursing homes. They said, you can't use that here. And he says, well, I'm not, you're gonna have to carry me and the nebulizer out of here, because that's, I'm not letting go of this. And they ended up letting him do it. And I remember during COVID, I had a elderly patient who was in a nursing home, and she wanted to use her nebulizer. They wouldn't let anyone use nebulizers in the nursing homes during COVID because they thought you were going to spread it. A nebulizer is a machine that mists fluid, so it goes into small droplets, so it goes deeply in the lungs. So you pour it in a little well, and it blows air through the water mixture, and so you can get it deep in the lungs. So the theory is perhaps you could spread it, but peroxide and iodine are going to kill. There's no virus; it's resistant to that.
You don't know this story about me because when I was in the COVID unit, I insisted on them bringing me my nebulizer because they came in with an HFA Huffer for me. For my, I asked for my budesonide. I didn't know about budesonide yet. I asked for my nebulization and they said, oh, the NIH says you can't have it. And I said, well, give me the science on why a person who can't breathe and has 85% oxygen, why I can't have a nebulizer breathing treatment. They said, well, you'll disseminate the virus into the atmosphere. And I said, I am the virus. I am in the virus's unit. You are the virus's nurse. Everybody on the whole unit has the virus. Give me my nebulizer. And they would not do it. And I had to
No,
get
I
home,
know.
make a public cry out. I did not know about hydrogen peroxide at that time. And somebody told me that I needed budesonide and budesonide with Dr. Richard, oh goodness. But anyways, he put budesonide works out there. And budesonide was my nebulization help. But the fact is, nebulization was the answer for me and they denied it.
You're not the only one. That story's been repeated over and over. And now it's another sad chapter in the COVID misery.
It's illogical what went down. I mean, it just made no
Yes.
sense. I mean, just to hear a nurse say, did you hear? I even said, did you hear what you said? A person with breathing distress can't have a breathing treatment. So unbelievable. So here you are. You've been doing this for a long time. You knew that you could anti-infect the upper airway with the iodine and the hydrogen peroxide. You knew it already worked because you've been using it on your flu patients. And then you also added, tell us why you had the, and let's go over it, the vitamin C dosage and why. Let's go with that one first.
So let me, you and I talked beforehand. Let me give a little promo of a regular doctor becoming a holistic doctor, and it'll
Yes.
tailor into the it'll come right into the answer to that question.
Okay.
So I didn't start off this way. Started off as a regular doctor, and I grew up in a conventional household. We didn't take vitamins, we didn't take any supplements. We just went to the doctor when we were sick, and we took whatever the doctor told us. We didn't question anything either. So I had a severe case of asthma as a child and numerous ER visits. And I really thought when I was growing up, I knew what I was going to die from, and it was going to be suffocating from asthma. So I wanted to be a doctor, and I wanted to be a doctor to help people and to model myself after my family doctor because he helped me. So I went to the University of Michigan, and we have not spoken about Michigan being the national champion in football right now. And that's made me very happy. And every interview I'm doing from now on is going to have just Michigan gear on.
You just enjoy it all year long until it may change.
I don't think it's going to change, but
Okay.
anyways, so I went to undergraduate University of Michigan, then med school at Wayne State University, and then did a family practice residency. So I wanted to be was just a general family doctor. I used to tell people in my training and a little bit beyond, so I changed, that there's no reason to take vitamins. You're just going to make expensive urine. They don't do anything, and we get enough stuff from food. And I thought drugs were the treatment of choice. So I finished doing my residency. And I start in a busy family practice office, near where I'm at now, practicing conventional medicine. And around 6 months into that practice, I start to get my first bouts of insomnia for an unknown reason. For about 3 nights in a row, I didn't sleep well at all. And after that third night, I'm getting ready to go to work. Allison, my wife, and I we went to work about the same time. And I blurt out to her as we're getting dressed in the morning, I don't want to be a doctor anymore. Now, she's known me since I was 18 years old. It's all I thought it was a calling for me to be a physician. I still do. And it's all I wanted to do. I had no backup plan, and wanted to be a family doctor. She said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I am not helping people. All I'm doing is prescribing drugs. unless they had an infection, the drugs weren't treating an underlying cause of the infection. So I told her, I'm not treating the underlying cause of most of these patients' problems, and I'm having to treat them with more drugs to treat the problems than the first drugs. I said, I can't do this for the next 30 years. She said, well, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. She goes, do another residency. And I'm like, no, one of those was enough. And I didn't, I was floundering. So I went to work that day and I saw a patient, and his wife worked with my wife. We had gone out with him socially. He'd been bothering me to meet his chiropractor. At that point in my career, I never had met a chiropractor. I didn't know what they did. I didn't know the philosophy. I mean, but I used to tell people don't go see them because they were dangerous. And that's what it wasn't really taught to us. It was
presumed,
passed down to us.
Yeah.
It was told to us, you know, that's what chiropractors do. So I was putting him off for a while. And I remember at that visit, I said, all right, give me his number. So he gives me the number. And I think in my anxiety and my lack of sleep, I called him, set up a dinner date for the following Tuesday. Tuesday rolls around. I come home from work and I tell Allison, I'm canceling dinner, wasting my time. What's he going to, I don't need to meet a chiropractor. And she said, you got to go. It's, you already made this. It's too late to cancel. And she, as I'm walking out the door, she said, be nice. So I go. His name was Dr. Robert Radke. He starts talking to me about functional biochemistry and, you know, using nutrients to enhance the human biochemistry. And look, I took biochemistry at the University of Michigan. I got an A. I took biochemistry in med school. I did pretty well in that too. I thought I understood, chemistry was easy for me. Thought I understood biochemistry. As Dr. Radke was talking to me at that dinner, I didn't know anything functional I didn't know. So he got me a book, Healing with Nutrition. He became, you know, one of my best friends after that night, and, you know, till he died an early death until he died. But I took that book home. It was by Jonathan Wright, an allopathic physician. And I read the chapter on heart disease. I read it till 2 in the morning. And the reason I read it till 2 in the morning, my father was very sick at that time. He had his first heart attack at 40, his second heart attack at 42. Over the next 20 years, he had continual angina. He was popping nitroglycerin pills for chest pain like they were mints or something like that. And at that time, you know, at that stage of my life, he couldn't do anything. He was, anything would cause him chest pain. He looked pale and pasty. And we were all waiting for the phone call that he had died. So I called my dad up the next morning. I didn't sleep much before he went to work. And I said, hey, can you stop in the office? I want to draw a couple of blood tests on you. So I drew a whole thyroid panel instead of the one TSH test that I was taught in med school. And I drew his testosterone levels based on what Dr. Radke talked about and what I read in that book that night, and get his blood work back. And his testosterone levels were below detectable limits. No one had bothered to check it. They were basically reading a zero. His thyroid levels were in the reference range, but in the lower part of the reference range. And I put him on two things. I put him on natural thyroid hormone and natural testosterone. Within 7 days, his 20-year history of angina melted away. He called me up day 7 and said, hey, I didn't take any nitros today. I'm like, wow. I think I feel better. And the next day he calls, he says, I'm not taking any nitros. And he never took any from that moment on. And his cholesterol 30 days later, which was in the 300s on medication, and he was on 12 medications for high cholesterol, diabetes, and hypertension, and heart disease. He was on, his cholesterol fell below 200 instead of stuck in the 300s on medication 30 days later without changing any of his bad habits, which my dad had a lot of bad dietary habits and smoked cigarettes and was overweight and never exercised. And more importantly, he looked better. He was not pale and pasty. He was pink again. He could do things without chest pain. He started to lose weight on his own without changing any of his habits. Once I saw the changes in my dad, I knew that's what I wanted to do in medicine. So I basically did a 180. I went to the partners in that practice and I said, I was negotiating a buy-in for, we're going to sign an agreement in a couple months.
With chiropractors?
No, with my family practice office I was at. No.
Okay.
Well, regular family practice office. And I got rid of my lawyer. So I called me with the partners and I said, hey, I need to leave. Aren't you going to be a partner? No. Why? I want to go do holistic medicine. I told them about my dad. They said, what's that? And I said, I don't know, but I'm going to have to figure this out. So they said, why don't you do it here? And I said, no, I need an office where the people answering the phones, the people filing the charts, the nurses, everybody's on the same page. I want an office where we're all on the same page, same philosophy. And so I left and, you know, my wife was 8 months pregnant at that time. And, you know, she So bless her heart, she didn't put any pressure on me. She said, "You want to do this? You do this. We're going to work. We're going to get it to work." And the best thing I ever did. And here I am 30 years later and still figuring out what holistic medicine is, but I have a little better idea now. But anyways, so I start practicing holistic medicine, and every patient from that moment on gets a full hormonal and nutritional evaluation. Just like the hormonal part I did with my dad. And then I started doing nutritional medicine, you know, in addition to that, and correcting biochemical deficiencies and finding really good results with people. So when flu season came around, you know, the reports, as I mentioned earlier, were 20 to 100,000 people die every year from the flu. Back then, there was nothing to treat the flu. We didn't have Tamiflu, which is a lousy drug that should never have been put on the market. It doesn't really treat the flu anyways, and it's too many side effects, but we didn't even have that. There was nothing. Back then, the powers that be said, stay home, you know, stay home and rest. Go to bed, you know, when you get the flu, and go back to work when you're feeling better. So I was going to let 20 to 100,000 people, just tell them to stay home. So I developed, you know, I started trying different things to see what, I started looking through literature. So vitamin C came in, you know, there's tons of studies with vitamin C and viral infections. And
okay, before you know, I let you go in and go into that, I'm definitely going to have to cut for the break because we're going to have to do an intermission for our sponsors. And we're going to pick back right up there where you came in to be this enlightened person about these supplements that you had once upon a time been against. So can't wait to hear that. But before we get back to this, don't forget to check out our online store at AmericaOutloud.shop, where you can find all the products that make it possible for us to bring you discounts on our network and these special interviews with brave doctors like Dr. Brownstein. We have the sponsor for Nurses Out Loud, ASEA. Please check out ASEA's powdered dietary supplement performance packs. This weekend, I am at my son's baseball tournament, and he's going to be using the energy powdered drink every day before his games. And we are going to be making him feel strong, because when you feel strong, you are strong. Use promo code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your purchase. I'll catch you on the other side of the break.
It's time, and this is why.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our customers will tell you how our products have made a difference for them, from improving immune health and supporting gut health to reducing the appearance of wrinkles and even improving mind, mood, and energy. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA. We power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-term effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. Fortunately, Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula with the miracle enzyme natokinase, scientifically studied to dissolve spike protein so you can feel your very best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Well, the year 2024 is upon us, and it is our chance to get it right and take back a free America. AmericaOutloud.news is your source for uncensored and factual news that facilitates truth and unity among all Americans to restore that American dream we have always cherished. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud. We're going to pick back up where we left off with Dr. Brownstein, and he was telling us about how he became a functional medicine doctor from the allopathic world. Wow. And so let's start with what I call the Brownstein protocol and what is in the Brownstein protocol for respiratory viruses.
And so, the first thing was vitamin C. You know, when I began researching, you know, how are we going to treat all these people with flu-like infections? Which a third of them every year are coronavirus infections. Even though we never tested for them, that's what's reported by the government when, you know, the CDC, when they test them. I read all the literature I could about vitamin C, and I started recommending 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C every hour while they're awake, unless they got, you know, until bowel tolerance. Vitamin A, you know, has very important properties for the immune system. And vitamin A has been used for measles infections for a long time. And so I had people use, this is adult dosing, 100,000 units of vitamin A a day, not beta carotene, but vitamin A for 4 days. And the vitamin C was until they're better. Vitamin D, you know, this was 30 years ago we did this. There wasn't a lot of literature on it, but there was enough on it. And I know, and I studied vitamin, you know, C and D's and A's effects on the immune system. And I thought these would be great for viral infections. And so I put them on 50,000 units of vitamin D a day for 4 days. And then iodine was the last addition to that. And there's not a virus, bacteria, parasite that's resistant to iodine. Recall that if you're going to surgery, many times they'll scrub your skin down with iodine before they'll touch you, because iodine can sterilize the skin. So most of my patients are on iodine. We'll talk about iodine, as you and I spoke about earlier. And most of America is deficient in iodine. Iodine levels have fallen over 50% over the last 50 years, according to the government. But if they weren't on iodine, I'd put them on 25 milligrams of a combination of iodine and iodide, like Lugol solution. Or if they were already on iodine, I would have them just double their dose when they got sick. The first sign of a scratchy throat or a sneeze, or when you know something's coming, that's when I'd have people start this protocol.
So they would take capsules of iodine and also add the liquid Lugol's iodine to nebulization, or I've heard.
So this is the oral. This is just the oral stuff. So they could either use Lugol's liquid or they could use capsules. But these A, C, D, and iodine were taken orally for 4 days at high doses. And then as part of that protocol, I had them nebulize a dilute solution of hydrogen peroxide and iodine. And I would, you know, you figured out the math, and I figured out the math later, but they could mix their own solution at home. It was very easy to do and very cheap to do. And it would come up to a 0.03 to 0.04% hydrogen peroxide solution. That's what I did on the Blue Man. And that's what I did for viral infections. And I'd have them add one drop of 5% Lugol solution to that. I have that protocol in here and have, you know, ways to do it at home. Nebulizer is like $60.
Oh yeah, right. $60.
Nebulizer is $60. The solution costs, I don't know, maybe $10, probably less than that.
And it lasts forever.
And it lasts for a long time. And I had them nebulize every hour while they were awake. And as they got better, they could lay off the nebulizing. And what I kept hearing from patients over and over and over, and I'm still hearing today, is the second dose of nebulizing peroxide and iodine, if they're having trouble breathing, their lungs open up and they could breathe better the second or third dose. But, you know, the first dose, you know, not, people a lot of times didn't notice anything. Boy, that second dose an hour later, that really made a big difference, and their pulse oxygen started to come up. And so we found that the mainstay. And then if people needed more, they'd come in the office. Well, during COVID, we didn't have them in the office. We treated them outside in the parking lot. But we would give them IVs of vitamin C, pushes of vitamin C, hydrogen peroxide, and then ozone shots in the rear end. And really, that's our protocol. And
I remember an image that you must have posted, and it had something that had all these people out there in the blustery Michigan weather getting their care through a window with all these nurses and you outside doing it in the blustery weather.
Very, you know, when COVID started, it was March in Michigan, and that was a cold March, man. There was snow and there was hail and there was ice, and, you know, it was terrible. It was, you know, 20 degree weather. We would be out in that parking lot till 9 o'clock at night. And, you know, snow, nothing deterred us from doing it. My, you know, and we had a whole assembly line, because we'd have sometimes 10, 15 cars lined up waiting, and people would roll down their window. We'd have them stick their arm out the window. We became masters of putting these IVs in the hand. To this day, I was good at IVs, but, you know, now I don't even think about it. You know, we can get anyone's IVs.
If you can get an IV in 20 degree weather, right?
20 degree weather. And sometimes, you know, look, if they were dehydrated, we hang these bags from poles outside, 20 degree weather. So bag would come from inside the office, but then it would get cold up there, and it's coming in, and I tell them to turn on their heater, and they bring blankets. And I, you know, it was an amazing sight. It was, you know, COVID, when I look back on it, was really exciting, mm-hmm, and miserable and fun and fearful, and all into this one little ball was mixed. And, you know, it was really something. And, you know, it really, you know, we kept our patients out of the hospital. We, you know, I wrote a peer reviewed article on this, and, you know, got a, you know, went through a number of peer reviews, and, you know, published the first 109 patients that we did. And we should have had eight, I think the numbers might be off a little bit, but I think we were by that time, you know, in April, March and April, Michigan, I think we should have had 9 deaths out of that 109 people and 18 hospitalizations, something like that. And we had 2 hospitalizations, no deaths. And we knew we were onto something at that point. And, you know, that's when I started blogging about it and interviewing patients. And, you know, I was getting calls from doctors all over the country and the world asking, you know, how do you nebulize, you know, how do you mix up the solution? And, you know, and is it safe and all this stuff? And I remember one doctor from New York called me from the ICU asking me about it. And I said to him, I just read those articles about these 2 kids who died. Like, they were teenagers. I said, I don't understand, how are teenagers dying from this? They, you know, and he said, what they're not reporting is that the young people that are dying in their teenagers and 20s and maybe even their 30s, they're all vaping. Uh-huh. And he said, the ones who get really sick that he's seeing, he was intubating them. He was an anesthesiologist in some New York hospital. He said they all vaped and they all had really bad lung quality because of this vaping. Wow. He said the healthy ones who didn't vape didn't end up in, you know, intubated and all that. That's what he told me.
I want to move on to that FDA story, but I want to first say really quickly that we will have all the details specifically in the show notes. So you can always go to americaoutloud.news/nursesoutloud, push on Nurse Michelle's face, and it will take you to my most recent article, and you can look up Dr. Brownstein's interview. But the quick Brownstein protocol that I'm going to say very fast is 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C every wakeful hour until you improve. If you start to have loose bowels, you would go back to a maintenance dose level, and we can talk about that later. Dr. Brownstein specified actually that it was to use ascorbic acid, and that if you use liposomal vitamin C, to be sure to take it with food for better absorption. And the vitamin A, he had, remember, these are adult doses, vitamin A, 100,000 milligrams per day for 4 days only, and vitamin D, 50,000 IUs per day for 4 days. And you nebulize 0.04% hydrogen peroxide every hour on the first day, and then every 4 hours for the next 4 days, if you're even sick 4 days later. Okay, and then the quick little mason jar recipe that's simple to do is a half a tablespoon of hydrogen peroxide, which is 3% hydrogen peroxide. So a bottle of 3% food grade hydrogen peroxide, we only use a half a tablespoon to 2 1/3 cups of saline, and you've got yourself 0.04% hydrogen peroxide. So that's the easy peasy recipe. Then we also will have some information that Nurse Michelle teaches you on just how to nebulize, nebulizing 101. But moving on, while he's doing these wonderful things and getting this simple science out there, that simple protocol, somebody doesn't like that. So let's find out what happened.
So it was either the end of March, beginning of April. It was a Tuesday night. I worked, Tuesdays are late day in our office anyways, but I'd worked till about 9 o'clock at night doing IV stuff after work. And I was exhausted. I came home. My daughter, Jessie, who was in med school at that time, was living with us. And I walk in the door. It was cold. I remember I had a winter jacket on. I'm holding my briefcase and a bag, or, you know, in each hand. And I'm standing with my coat on, just beat. And I look and, you know, I walk in the door and there's my wife at her desk and my daughter's looking over her shoulder and they got this look on their face, this terrible look. And I said, "What's wrong? You come in." I said, "Is everyone okay?" And my wife said, "Take your coat off, come in and sit down." She goes, "We have some news." I said, "Is it good news?" She goes, "No." I said, "Tell me." And she goes, "I want you to take your coat off first." And I said, "Just tell me." And I'm standing there. She goes, "We got a letter from the FTC. And I'm looking at her. It was 9 o'clock at night. I worked 12 hours, or over 12 hours. I was at work at 7:15 that morning. And I said, "FTC, the federal FTC, the Federal Trade Communication?" "Yes." I'm like, "What do they want?" "They want you to take everything down or else." And I said, "Me?" And she goes, "Yeah, you." I said, "Is a letter addressed to me?" She goes, "Yes, it is." And I said, "What's this about?" And she goes, "It's ridiculous, but you're going to have to read this and take your jacket off." So I come in. If you Google my name and FTC, you can read the letter yourself, and anyone can read the letter. So the letter is single spaced. It's 4 to 6 pages. I don't remember. It's 4 pages, maybe single spaced, 6 pages. They have quotes from all these interviews I was doing. I mean, somebody spent hours and hours and hours on this. And what they kept saying was, because there's no proven treatment, prevention, or cure of COVID-19, any mention thereof falls in violation of FTC code, blah, 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 blah. And if you don't take it down within 48 hours, you're going to hear from the U.S. Justice Department. Wow. So this was March or April of 2020. There was no one was doing anything. The prevention, treatment, or cure for COVID-19, according to the government, was go home, stay at home for 14 days, and go to the hospital when you can't breathe. And then we will... we'll admit you to the hospital and vent you if you can't breathe. And, you know, 88% chance you're going to die at that point. So I was reading and I said, I don't understand this. How are they? They kept calling it an advertisement. And she goes, that's what they're telling you. You're doing, you're advertising for your practice. I said, I never said buy vitamin C for me. I never said buy iodine for me. I was just saying what I was doing. I was saying what I was doing in my practice. Well, they're calling it an advertisement for your practice. I must have asked her 3 or 4 times in a row. And so a couple of days later, I get a letter from the Board of Medicine. It's basically saying the same thing. And that started an investigation into my license. And so the two things were going on at once.
April of 2020, they're starting on you in the middle of the pandemic.
I think, I don't remember the exact dates, but I think it was then. And you know, so two things were going on at once. You know, I stopped sleeping at that point for a little bit before I got myself under control. And, you know, I complied and, you know, with the FTC stuff. What happened was I got the letter from the FTC and I posted it right to my website immediately. And I got 2 phone calls right away from that. First phone call was Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who I had some interaction with. I didn't really know him at all before this. And I got a call from Del Bigtree, from Highwire. And Robert F. Kennedy said, you know, he asked me to send a letter. I posted it. He read it. So he said, the law is a good law that they're getting you on. He goes, they're misapplying the law to you. And he said, you know, you're in a tough situation. He goes, I wouldn't fight it if I were you. I would take everything down and see if it goes away. He goes, because they're gonna bankrupt you. And there's, you know, there's significant penalties and jail time involved with this too. They find you guilty. So Del Bigtree refers me to Aaron Seary, you know, the lawyer that's been suing the government for the FOIA. And, you know, this is before Aaron Seary started doing, I don't know, he was probably doing a little bit of that stuff then.
Well, he's been doing before children are vaccinated and vaccine injured long before everybody heard his name, right?
So I called Aaron Seary and, you know, he said basically the same thing. He said, you know, you're the first, you know, one of the first to get this letter. He goes, I haven't heard this. And, you know, he gave me, he, you know, he goes, I don't know. I think you should consult a constitutional lawyer. So a First Amendment lawyer.
Okay.
So I get a lawyer in D.C., get a recommendation for a lawyer in D.C. for almost $1,000 an hour. And It's COVID. So he's working from home, getting $1,000 an hour, Zooming me. So he does this white paper after we're done. And he says, tells me, explains the law to me. And he says, here's what they're saying. He's saying you're advertising. They're saying you're advertising. He goes, we could fight this. It'll go to the U.S. Supreme Court, probably. He goes, I don't know how they're going to rule. He goes, but I want to, and I seem to remember he wants a $10 million retainer to do this. And yeah, so I said, I don't have money like that. And he said, so if I were you, just don't publish anything and keep doing your daily job and call me if they come after you again. And so really the FTC went away at that point. And the state board didn't. They churned. And churned and churned and churned.
What was their problem? What did they have against you? Because they couldn't have had it for advertising. They wouldn't have cared that you were advertising, right? That wouldn't have been a problem.
Well, the first complaint that they claimed they received was basically the FTC stuff. I think they were talking to one another. I don't really know. So later into this, as this churn was going on, they got two complaints people filed against my license. And one complaint was a patient who was not in my, I never took care of this patient in the practice. I never saw the patient. That it was a, you know, it was a family member who was unhappy that the mother chose to be non-vaccinated and, you know, made a complaint. I never saw that patient. The other complaint was an internet complaint that nebulized peroxide burned her lungs. Now,
NIH doesn't agree.
Well, so I had to have a couple of meetings and, you know, they're, you know, I said, I don't know who this patient is. I didn't treat the patient. She didn't use my protocol because a 0.03 or 0.04% peroxide solution will not burn anyone's lungs. And I don't know what she nebulized. And
you know that eventually, the American Academy of Asthma, during that exact time, because this all came out, put in a red warning on their page that said how people will die from burned lungs by nebulization of 10%. And we're like,
so that was brought to my attention, dear. In front of in a interview with the board, that exact thing was brought to my attention. I was aware of that, and I said, "Well, I'm using 0.03%." So that's I figured out it was 30 times the dose. I think I did the math or whatever. I think it's 30 times the higher the dose than I was using, or 300 times. I don't remember now what the numbers come out to be, or 100 times or something. You know, I said I don't know what that dose does. A 10% hydrogen peroxide solution. I don't use it.
Who does?
Am I shocked that a 10% solution would burn somebody's lungs? No, I would guess it probably would, but I didn't do that. And my 0.03% or 0.04% doesn't do that. So they did bring up that, they brought that up to me and they threw that at me. Like they were going to, like a gotcha thing. And I'm like, that's ridiculous.
We kind of said it was 10% you were talking about, not 0.04.
The mine was, right. So this churned on for till about a month ago. And, you know, 3.5 years or so. I got a letter. Well, my office manager comes to me with a letter saying, you know, case dismissed. She hands it to me and goes, I got good news for you. And she shows me the letter, one sentence. The case has been dismissed. And I look at the letter and I start using some choice words. And I was using choice words for a good few minutes, a couple sentences of choice words. And she said to me, isn't this good news? And I said, give me 5 to 10 minutes first. And I said, where's the letter of apology? You know, I mean, it was stressful. It was awful. You know, I mean.
What was that one sentence they wrote you?
Sentence was, this case has been dismissed.
No explanation, nothing.
No. So I filed a FOIA act and got the file, and it wasn't much there. You know, there just wasn't much there. I couldn't tell. I couldn't, you know, it was interesting. Some of the doctors that recommended it go to full board, you know, whatever, all said, this is not standard of care. This needs to be investigated. Well, there was no standard of care in 2020. There was nothing to do. The standard of care was do nothing, tell people to stay at home until they couldn't breathe. That should be investigated. That was a crime.
Exactly.
That was something wrong.
That's how Nurse Michelle came out of retirement and had to take care of thousands of people who had no doctors caring for them. And they were only abandoned people who I was doing the best I could just to teach them anything that they could do to survive, because
medicine abandoned what we were to do. This is, I told you at the beginning, I don't know if I did, but I feel medicine's been a calling for me. I'm happy. Look, I tell people, would you go into medicine again? Absolutely. I would do it again. I wouldn't hesitate. Now, I would have done holistic medicine a little bit earlier in my career, but I don't have to change anything, and I'm happy with where I'm at. And medicine's a calling, and I'm glad I did, and I would do it again. Even with all the stress, even through all that misery, I would do it again, and it was worth it. And what's not worth it is telling people, stay at home till you can't breathe and then go to the ER. That's just, and no. I'm going to do virtual visits with you because I'm afraid to see you. And, there's no value in me touching you or being, treating you as a human being, as a doctor-patient human being relationship, that we can do this over the phone the same way. No, that's not how I'm practicing medicine. I wouldn't want to do it. That would not be fulfilling to me, and that would not be my calling.
I want to make sure that everybody understands that even though they did come after him, the practice kept practicing. You kept seeing patients. You just could not put things out on the internet anymore. All right.
We kept at it, man. We kept at it. We didn't miss a beat. I did miss that interaction. And I have not restarted it. I thought about it, and I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. How many COVID patients did y'all see? Did you calculate?
Well, we kept track till we got in the thousands, and then we looked. It's a couple thousand. And we kept track until we hit about 2,000 or so. And then we just stopped doing it, because we're still seeing them today. And our patients have done fine.
Yeah, because everybody, COVID is still here. Even though all the mandates are gone, it's still COVID. There's still COVID.
We had two deaths out of all those patients. And these were old people who, multiple comorbidities. And I don't know if the wind blows the wrong way, they would have died, just from the time was coming and COVID pushed them over the edge. But, we kept the vast majority, our numbers of hospitalized and death were way lower than what any of the statistics were out there. And we did good medicine, and, we're still doing good medicine. And,
mention the name of your clinic for those who are listening in Michigan.
We're the Center for Holistic Medicine in West Bloomfield. My website is drbrownstein.com, Dr. Brownstein. And the website is www.centerforholisticmedicine.com. Well, and there's seven of us now. I have two daughters who joined me who are both physicians. And I'm having fun with that. And we like what we do.
Well, I am so thankful you came here. We're going to have him back because we are going to do a whole school session on iodine. Class will be in. Thank you, Dr. Brownstein.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
It is because of brave doctors around this country who stepped up and did what they were called to do to share their knowledge with their communities and be among the healers of their generation. Dr. Brownstein is for Michigan, his community, and his football team. Because he shared his knowledge with what I call the Brownstein Protocol out to the world, Nurse Michelle was able to find him, and I shared his knowledge with thousands of others. One man helped many people through a pandemic all over the world. Remember, we are in a war for truth, and the truth is, this generation needs more people going into the medical profession, but those people need to feel the call to be among the healers of their generation, and they need to be willing to be the brave among us. Watch and learn from the brave. Until next week.
It's time.